News.
New York City.
FAQ NYC podcast getting more and more interesting by the minute.
FAQ.
It's FAQ NYC, the New Yorkers podcast from the newsroom by and for New Yorkers, the city. I'm Katie Honan, here with Dr. Christina Greer and Harry Siegel. Hello.
Good morning.
And Harry's going to jump right in with just some of the news from another jam-packed week in New York City.
Hello. An appeals court has reinstated the bribery and fraud charges against former New York Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin, who resigned when he was charged just months after being appointed by then new governor Kathy Hochul. The court found that his deal with the shelter operator and developer had hit the increasingly high bar the Supreme Court has set for such charges. Now that the charges have been revived, what's next is unclear, however, because developer Gerald Mignol, who pleaded guilty to giving bribes and would have been prosecutor star witness, died in February. Benjamin has already been convicted of a conspiracy charge. Some firefighters and family members booed Attorney General Tish James when she appeared at a promotion ceremony in a church in East New York last week, and then chanted Trump, Trump, Trump as she spoke. Fire Commissioner Laura Kavanaugh, who hopefully we're going to have on the pod soon, apologized to the church at services this Sunday. It's been a head-spinning few weeks of school lunch news. The city abruptly cut some of the most popular items in the middle of the school year. Then city budget director Jacques Gia blamed kids for those cuts, saying the issue was they've been eating too much. Then the city undid most, but not all of those cuts. All this has parents, not to mention kids, principals, and food suppliers, perplexed about who's in charge here and what they're thinking. Speaking of hot messes, far from fabulous, George Santos crashed the State of the Union last week and then announced a new run in New York's 1st District covering the eastern swath of Long Island. That's a pan for Republican incumbent Nick LaLota in the competitive district and likely a fundraising boon for Democrats hoping to claim the competitive seat, including my old friend and former Daily Beast boss, John Avalon, who left his perch as a talker on CNN to try and flip it. But the hottest mess of all has got to be Kathy Hochul sending in heavily armed National Guard members decked in jungle camo, originally with long guns, to check bags on and supposedly somehow change vibes in the New York City subways. She first announced she'd be doing this last week without Mayor Eric Adams present. And the move has been the subject of pretty widespread mockery and criticism, even as it's gotten some praise from the right and the likes of Tom Cotton, who you might recall is the senator who wrote that send in the troops op-ed for the Times back in 2020. Chrissy, we know that polls show a lot of New Yorkers don't feel safe around the city and on the trains, but what the hell is this? Sending in the guard.
Ugh, Kathy Hochul. She better be lucky her election's in 2026 and not this term. You know, first of all, seeing military personnel with these long guns and like armed to the teeth like they're in the jungles of Nicaragua doesn't make me feel safe. It feels like performative theater. It feels like a waste of my tax money. So, yeah, we've had a few highly publicized, you know, incidents on subways, you know, someone getting slashed or, you know, the unfortunate incident this weekend with it's a domestic dispute where a boyfriend pushes his girlfriend onto the tracks and she's had to have her feet amputated. I mean, horrific crimes, but they don't happen every day. And we do know, if we remember the snowstorms when Cuomo would just override de Blasio and shut down the subways and not even let him know, we know that Albany and sort of the governor controls the MTA. That part, for the life of me, I don't understand. Like, why someone who doesn't live here controls what we use on a daily basis. But I just, you know, it's like, Kathy Hochul, think. Like, she has enough Black and brown people around her where I would hope that when she says, I want to bring in the National Guard, I'm like, the same National Guard that, like, you know, helped desegregate, you know, schools across the country 50 years ago, that National Guard is supposed to keep us safe on the subway? It's like, it doesn't make sense. So with this massive long gun, I don't even know what kind of gun it is. If you see crime, what are you supposed to do with said gun? Are you going to shoot someone with, like, whatever this weapon is? Like, what? It feels performative, and it doesn't make me feel safer. As a Black person, definitely doesn't make me feel safer. But as a New Yorker, put the sort of Black racial piece aside for a hot second. It's like, okay, so you see something going down. You see the little fisticuffs come out. You've got this massive weapon. What are you going to do with it? You're going to shoot it? You're going to shoot a whole bunch of people? You're going to shoot thousands of people on the platform with your big old gun and very little training on how to be in an urban environment with that gun? Like, what is the point of this, Kathy?
Just real quick, I have to mention that Kathy Hochul said over the weekend, after there were all these shots of these guys with their long guns out, and she, very specifically, they're here to be doing bag checks, right? She didn't bring up bigger security concerns. 70% of New Yorkers say they fear a mass shooting. The targets people on, you know, race, ethnicity, religion, all that. She says they won't hold them anymore while they're doing these bag checks, that she's put that order out. But obviously this was sloppy and belated and came after her big announcement, and all of that imagery was already in wide circulation. And it further begs the question of why we have soldiers, not cops, in the trains. In any event, they still will have long guns. They're just not going to have them. They won't hold them while they're doing the bag checks.
Right, and so that's the thing. It's like, don't split hairs with me, Kathy Hochul. So while the person's sifting through my purse, making me late for where I need to go, the person next to them has this massive gun, but the person who's actually doing the digging with the gloves on doesn't. That's a hair splitting, because you're still intimidating New Yorkers right there. Second, we have the largest police force in the country. Like, why do we need more? Why do we need the National Guard? Like, so are you telling me then that our police force is inept, incapable of doing their jobs? So do we need to have a reevaluation of why we have all these police officers then who, according to Kathy, can't keep things under control? Like, which one is it? So I just think that it's a waste of resources. I think enough New Yorkers see it as performative. Like, it doesn't. There is no data that shows that, you know, massive guns are going to automatically make things safer.
I don't know. I go through Penn Station a lot, and I see a lot of these non-NYPD guardsmen, big whatever, and I don't know. Does it make me feel safe or not? I think the bad things are happening on the platforms or in the subway cars. I also will say, and this is based off my memory, even at my subway station at 61st and Woodside, I feel like they have bag checks. You know, around the holidays, mm-hmm. there's LaGuardia access there. So it's not anything that is something that I'm not already used to. That being said, I just don't know how effective they are how effective they will be. And yeah, I mean, aside from the subway shooter who got on at Avenue X in Brooklyn, I don't know if the National Guard is going to be there. Most people who are committing crimes on the subway, it's not like they have a big bag of weapons. It's pushing people. It's not weapons at all. It's slashing someone. The employee who was stabbed last week, I think it was the motorman who was slashed. You know, is that something you're going to find in a bag check? No. It's like, right. The whole thing just seems a little performative. And, you know, it contradicts the mayor's sort of persistent jobs are up, crime is down, jobs are up, crime is down. But, oh, we're going to flood the subways with the National Guard. I don't know the purpose of that. And there's also been politically, like the police, the NYPD top brass seems to be opposed to this, or at least that's what their kind of kooky, crazy tweets are implying. John Chell was tweeting, we've had bag checks since 2005. I would guess we've had them before 2005, probably more related to 9/11. So I don't know what's going on. I have yet to see, and I've been through Grand Central and Penn Station. I have yet to see bag checks. When I went through Grand Central last week, just connecting from the 7 to the 4-5, I saw more news photographers than bags getting checked. So it just seems like they're stopping like students and people trying to get to work. And then if you refuse a bag check, I can just go to another station. So
right.
I don't know how effective it'll be. I think people want a police presence. I will point out, years ago, I saw a man assault, presuming based on what they were carrying with them, someone who was unhoused. And I took video and I tried to report it to the police and they refused to take the police report. They told me, oh, only the victim can file the police report. So I don't know exactly. I mean, that's just purely anecdotal, but I think about that a lot because I think, I don't know who this person was and I don't know what his intentions were. And I watched him assault somebody on the subway and I wanted to at least get it on the police radar in case this person is a pattern of behavior and they refuse to take it. So I often wonder how effective even the transit police are if, you know, again, my one experience, someone listening can, the NYPD is listening, they can come and complain, but that was just my experience years and years ago, so...
Well, I would think that Eric Adams would be all over this. Wasn't he a transit cop?
He talks about that a lot.
Like, isn't this his wheelhouse? Like, isn't this his home base? Should this not be the area where, sure, crime can happen in a myriad of places across the city, but I would think if you're a transit cop, then the safest place in the city would be where you're from, which is public transportation. I would think that this would be the last place where you'd need extra intervention. So I just... I'm like, I spend a lot of money. I get, I'm a taxpayer. It's part of the process. I spend a lot of money on things I don't like to spend money on as a taxpayer. My taxes go to things that I fundamentally do not support at home and abroad. But this constant increased police presence and now this National Guard presence, of which I'm paying for as a taxpayer, and I still don't feel like it's effective, then what? Where's the money going? Because it's not going to training. I mean, I've written about sort of seeing young Black girls being hemmed up by police for jumping a turnstile. But then I go to the theater all the time. I can go to 66th Street and see blue-haired ladies just walking through the gate. Police are right there. No one says anything. So, like, we know that there's a race conversation to be had. There's a class conversation to be had. There's a station-by-station conversation to be had. So I'm looking at all these inequities, and I'm like, what is the money for then? What am I paying for? Because I don't feel safer by police and definitely not by the National Guard. Like, honestly, if I'm traveling, I don't travel in subway late at night just because I'm of a certain age and I like to be relaxed. But like, if I'm traveling late at night, I just find Black people. Like, that's the way I was taught. I wasn't taught to find police. It was just like, find Black people and just stick with them if you're ever in a jam. So for me, looking at people in camo and like guns, and they're not rifles, but these assault weapons, I'm just sort of like, what? Where are we going as a society? Maybe that's the existential crisis I'm having right now. Like, where are we going as a city? The future of urban development. Where is that going if the symbol of safety is military that we are usually exporting to other countries? There's another question to be had as to why we're exporting them to other countries and terrorizing other people who may or may not look like us. That's a different conversation to be had. But I just feel like Kathy Hochul, I don't know. She just, 2026 is going to be fascinating for me because I don't know if she'll have a Democratic challenger. We know female candidates, whether they're doing well or not, tend to have, or female incumbents tend to have a challenger no matter what, just because men are like, hey, I can do it. So, and then, you know, the prevalence of just millionaires and billionaires who are like, I have money, I could do it. And then obviously a Republican, because she's like quasi-Republican sometimes, like there's, I don't know how much Democratic fervor is there for her. I'm really fascinated by 2026 and Kathy Hochul's primary and then her general.
A couple things to throw in here. Both Adams and Hochul have not very credibly denied that there's any conflict between their approaches here. And Hochul has put nearly $1 billion into police overtime over the last couple of years as the train numbers were going up. Notably, Hochul made this announcement right after the Adams team, after a very bad January where crime in the subway system was up 45% overall, to a whole series of high-profile incidents. There were three murders in, I think, 6 weeks, which is more than any year from, like, 2000 to the start of the pandemic, all this stuff. But then the numbers were down in February, and Team Adams had just put out a gigantic release. They no longer do just monthly briefings, whether the numbers are up or down, but they put out a huge, exhausting release with statements from 22 people about how the crime numbers were down. And then Hochul comes in and says, I don't care about the numbers. I care about the feelings. And New Yorkers don't feel safe. And I'm a governor of action, a very clumsy governor of action. and announced that she was doing this. Obviously, outside of the regular crime concerns, there's all sorts of, from like Mumbai to Frank James concerns, which are to some extent a separate question. Will you send the guard in to do policing and check bags? You are muddling those lines in ways that are really disconcerting and bad to see happening in America and in New York City. I do suspect that part of Hochul's math was also trying to appease the powerful transit workers union, which is extremely pissed off.
It's transport. I got to correct you. It's transport workers union.
Thank you. The TWU, Transport Workers Union. Katie, jump in here, but like they're furious about congestion pricing. They're running ads saying somebody needs to run against Hochul, who again isn't up for years at this point. But when she announced this, she made a point of talking about the bad crimes that targeted TWU workers and the conductor who got slashed. And I have to suspect that that's part of her math in saying, I got to do something. And lastly, the one reason Adams and Hochul want to avoid direct conflict is she can't have crime problems. That was Lee Zeldin's whole appeal and is sort of her weak spot statewide as she sees it. And Adams wants that overtime money for the police to keep coming in, as he's also wrestled with fears of this. And ridership is still down from before the pandemic. But Katie, can you get into some of that and how the TWU might fit into this bizarro thing that's actually happening in New York right now? It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, they've been really vocal against Kathy Hochul, running ads and being very critical of her. I mean, in a weird way, I see this as just, I'm used, this just seems normal. You kind of flood things in, you have, what are your resources? The subways are this weird thing where it's run and controlled by the state, but it's within New York City. you have two elected officials who I wonder where their strategy is, especially Governor Hochul on some of these decisions. So just like last year, was it last year or was it 2022? You flood the system with more police presence, whether it's NYPD or MTA police or whoever, or in this case, the National Guard, to at least in their minds, give the perception of safety. And I think it was the pressure from TWU with the conductor slash, which is a pretty brutal slashing, and it was horrible. And just the number of incidents against TWU employees, you know, there, if you speak to people who work on the trains, they do have real fear over what happens. And, but I also think it's a mental illness issue. And I know we've had, was it last year where you had the involuntary transfers and moving people and trying to, we had Brian Stetton on discussing that. But yeah, I see it more as a mental illness issue, and that's a bigger problem. You can't really just solve that by shoving cops down there.
Well, Hochul's plan does have $20 million to significantly increase the number of outreach units. I'm just curious if the
Is that enough? I don't know. Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, like what's $20 million? So like, I mean, what's the policing budget compared to the public mental health budget? I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I think, Harry, your point about blurring the lines is really key here. I mean, we see the debates going on in Atlanta with Cop City, and just sort of like, what kind of paramilitary organizations are we trying to support, and how are we trying to sort of make our cities these kind of police states? But, I mean, the amount of money that we invest in education, after-school activities, social service programs, you know, the things that Marion Barry talked about, yes, the late, great Marion Barry, Washington, D.C.'s first Black elected mayor, you know, to get people off the street. But now, obviously, the mental health funding, like none of that is commensurate with the amount of money we spend on policing. Like, it's just not enough. So it's like the numbers seem, you know, big until you really think of it. It's like $20 million is nothing for mental health, not just awareness, support for families, because we know for families who are living with someone who has mental health needs, it's not just support the person with mental health challenges. They need things, but like families need support as well. And that costs money. So I just feel like our priorities are always to try and like police our way out of a situation as opposed to thinking about the holistic solutions that could actually prevent some of these tragic events from occurring.
How much of this is election year oriented? And that we have a presidential election, and that New York is obviously going to be a character in that election. Like, look what these Democrats have done. Mm-hmm. Look how dangerous things are. Amplification of every individual crime. So far, the model is the migrants kicking the cops in Times Square, right? That was broadcast endlessly on Fox. The NYPD was very misleading about what led to that. They said the guys had fled because of the bail law. That turned out to be totally untrue. But, you know, all this information circulated massively before any of that came out. And is there some reasonableness in playing defense and saying, look, Democrats can do policing too, which Hochul outright said. I mean, she weirdly was saying a lot of the quiet stuff out loud about how this wasn't really about order. This was about messaging and psychology and all that stuff. It was very clumsy, all, but is there something reasonable in that approach at this moment or no?
She's not a political psychologist, first of all. But second of all, I would say that Eric Adams got elected on saying Democrats can do policing. It's just we're not used to seeing a Black police officer ever become mayor. That's just kind of not the type of Black elected we tend to have as the head of a city. It's, you know, more the lawyer type, business friendly type. So, I mean, I think it's fascinating. Had New York not been the reason why the House went to the Republicans and exposed itself as a very purple to red leaning state, which I've always said that about New York, and I've said that about New York City. Had we not been the reason why Democrats didn't continue with unified government, I don't think Republicans would feel as emboldened to say, like, ooh, this state is a mess. Because, like, if you look at California, I would think that, you know, California would be the state where they're like, look at L.A., look at San Francisco, the homelessness population, the drugs, the mental health. I mean, they're ripe for the picking as well. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's proximity to D.C., but the fact that, you know, those four seats fell on Democrats' watch. We can talk about New York State leadership on another podcast. But I think it exposes the vulnerability of New York Democrats when it comes to the electoral space. I mean, New York had 20 years of Republican mayors. You know, they had three terms of a Republican governor. It is possible. Like, this whole super blue New York nonsense is false. Like, when you look at, you know, town by town, neighborhood by neighborhood, the city is not hardcore blue. It just isn't. Leaving alone ideologically, we might be registered overwhelmingly as Democrats, but, like, let's be clear, there's a lot of wiggle room. And we've seen it. I mean, not just Long Island and Westchester, but, like, you know, New York City City Council, right? A few years ago, it was three people. Now it's five. Like, labels do matter, because if you are of a particular label, you are tacitly, implicitly, and explicitly saying that you support the values of, you know, people who are higher up on the ticket. So to be a Republican means certain things. It means certain things about immigration or a woman's right to choose or all the interesting things that go on. So I guess time will tell.
Katie, do you want to take us out here with some thoughts on Albany's going into its budget season? We have our first one house proposal. There's, like, an interesting-ish housing plan. All this will muddle forward for ages before we find out, May, what's actually happening. But what are you looking at in terms of what's happening at the state level right now, what's in play, and what's possible, and how this might affect New York City as we're getting toward a big ugly?
I guess we'll just, again, I have a lot of doubts in how the mayor does up in Albany. I know he gets very sensitive about that, but I'm curious the kind of behind-the-scenes work being done for the city to get what it wants, and we're just going to have to watch and see how it plays out as we get closer to this. I know it was incredibly late last year. Hopefully it won't be this year. Because a lot of the city's big-ticket agenda items rely heavily on Albany. That's just what I'm kind of looking at, and then how it plays with our budget as well, as we're last week, the budget talks and hearings began in the council. So just a lot of budget questions from here to Albany.
Let's leave it there. Lots more to discuss. My straw bet is Kathy Hochul has said, I don't know how long we're going to be doing this for. It's all about the psychology and the vibes. That by the time we reconvene next week, this may already, this guard deployment, just because, may already be quietly winding down. I think it's been a a tremendous embarrassment and a line needlessly crossed. And even with polling showing lots of New Yorkers have public safety concerns and would be happy to see more cops, right or wrong, that this was just a massive, weird, unforced error and Republican campaign ad that she's going to unwind as quickly as she can now, having finished her embarrassing press tour about this. All the day two and three stories where, you know, Hochul defends a batshit proposal. I'm paraphrasing.
We shall see.
Yeah, because nothing says policing like policing on vibes.
FAQ.
FAQ NYC is headquartered at The City, a nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom dedicated to hard-hitting journalism that serves the people of New York. We receive support from P&T Knitwear, an independent bookstore, cafe, and event space on Manhattan's Lower East Side, with a podcast studio that can be freely reserved for community use. The pod is an affiliate of the Colin Powell School at CUNY City College, where I'm one of the Moynihan Public Scholars inaugural fellows. And we're an affiliate of the Flaming Hydra newsletter, a collective of 60 writers and artists, including FAQ's Harry Siegel, delivering a cooperatively owned new newsletter to your inbox that you'll actually want to open. See more and subscribe at flaminghydra.com. Our engineer is Adam Kamara. Harry's our executive producer. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us and making it this far. Be kind, be cool, be warm. We'll be back soon with more.
I really, really want moving eye posters like Scooby-Doo style.
Oh, yeah.
But one, bizarrely, they don't seem to exist yet, which stuns me. And two, I would have to find a new wife and family.